Hi there, everyone. I'm Gwen Jones, and welcome once again to the I'm a Rotarian podcast, the weekly podcast where I introduce you to amazing people that proudly call themselves Rotarians. Well, this week, I'm off for some Caribbean breezes. That's right. I'm off to the Cayman Islands to meet Mr. Jeremy Hurst. Now, Jeremy is an entrepreneur living on one of the most beautiful places on earth, but when he's not doing that, he is part of the board of directors at Rotary International, not only this year with Jennifer, but next year with Gordon. He also is a Rotarian that is, self-admitted crazy about Rotary. I mean, it's his life, and he's gonna tell us all about it. So join us, won't you? Jeremy Hurst is joining me on the show today, and we're talking cool breezes and Rotary adventures. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I am pretty excited because Jeremy Hurst is joining me this week from the Caymans, because it just sounds so beautiful. However, as I speak to you today, I am in sunny Washington State, which is almost as cool as the Cayman Islands. Of course, if you don't know who Jeremy is, he's on the board of directors for Rotary International, for not only under Jennifer right now, but under Gordon as well, and our president-elect. And he's going to talk about Rotary. He's going to talk to me. And I have to say that we've tried to be doing this for the last year and a half. So I'm super glad that he joins me on the microphone today. Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Well, Gwen, I'm absolutely delighted to be here. And it's maybe a sunny day where you are, but it's one of those rare cloudy days in the Cayman Islands, so which we actually like. It gives us a little bit of a respite from that beautiful sun. So we won't be topping up our tans today, but so really a great day to be with you. You're here. And yes, we're finally together.
Yeah, we are finally together. So I joke all the time that to my fans that I am a proud Facebook stalker. And Jeremy was one of the first people I stalked. And then he's been a little busy the last couple of years, or I should say year and a half. What do you do? How come you couldn't be on my show? And I say that jokingly because...
Well, they say if you want a job done, give it to a busy person. And I think that's probably what's happened to me. And I'm active, I guess, and I love it, you know, and all aspects of what I do. And I'm very much dedicated and passionate about what we do in Rotary. My Rotary grew up in the Cayman Islands in the Caribbean when I arrived here in 1988 from the UK. And it's really my whole life has just grown up with Rotary in parallel. So everything I do business-wise, personally, Rotary is part of it, and it's intertwined with it. So it is a busy Rotary life, but I still have businesses. I develop property in the Caribbean, in particular in the Cayman Islands, and I have business partners here that are... I'm very happy to have. They understand my Rotary addiction, so they support me in it. Yeah, so it's all hands on deck, and enjoying every moment of it, right?
So are you? So when you're not on the board of directors, and when I was trying to hunt you down, it seemed like you were teaching something or speaking somewhere, or what exactly do you do for Rotary?
Well, I mean, obviously...
During the, quote, busy season, I should say.
During the busy season. Well, as part of being a director, and it really is much more than a quarterly board meeting. You know, we are very, very active within the operational aspects of Rotary. First of all, we are from... Each director is from two paired zones. My paired zones are zones 33 and 34, which run from Pennsylvania right the way down to the top of Suriname. To Suriname at the top of Latin America, right the way through the Caribbean. So we have a massive reach and a large geographical area, and 30 plus districts, and a real blend of nationalities and languages. And in the Caribbean alone, we have French, Dutch, Spanish, English, of course, and a whole host of Creoles. Then if you go into the United States, you have, you know, not just American, but you've got all the various dialects that go with that. I'm joking. It's not a language change, but it is a cultural change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I have to say you have, and it sounds oversimplification to say geographical differences, but you're talking islands, literally, mm-hmm. especially when one of our focuses is the environment. I mean, you have literally a zone that you're in charge of that's a, you know, from the continental United States to yeah. literally island nations. I mean, that's got to be a fascinating representation, because they all seem to have their problems, or they all seem to have their needs. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of have to play both sides? You have to run them each kind of differently, because one is more of a state, you know, and the other are islands?
Very much so. And that's the thing I love about my paired zones that I hail from. My job globally is obviously a global job with Rotary as a director. It's still very much to support the regional leaders, the districts, and most importantly, the clubs within those paired zones. When you ask what I was doing, it was that. It was involved with training for those clubs, training for those districts, working alongside them, building continuity, building structure, helping them deliver better Rotary experiences to our Rotarians so we can do a better job on the ground. So that's really what that goal was. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if you contrast where I'm sitting right now, you know, Cayman Islands is a 76 square miles is our largest island. We have two other smaller ones. We have a population of 80,000, 138 nationalities. We're an international wow. finance center as well as a tourism destination for luxury tourism primarily. But yet, when you go to my own district, 7020, which has 10 islands, 10 countries and 16 islands, you've got places like Haiti, you know, which are true countries, you know, the west side of Hispaniola with Dominican Republic on the other side. And in Haiti has 11 million people. And even though Cayman might be, by contrast, one of the wealthiest places in the world, Haiti is definitely one of the poorest and one of the most challenging places. So the other thing I do with my time is having been a district governor across the Caribbean, is focus on some of the needs of those countries. And I'm very proud to be associated with an organization called Handwash. I chaired its steering committee and I'm one of its founders. And our goal is to deliver clean water and sanitation that improves hygiene to all of the citizens of Haiti. And we'll take as long as it takes to do that, but we'll do it forever. And we're working alongside Rotary International, Rotary Foundation in delivering that. So that's one example of the contrasts and what we can bring to bear as an organization where I spend my time.
Well, and I think we forget our island nations. I mean, I know both of us got to finally meet face to face when we were in Houston, and I talk about all the flags that come mm-hmm. by, and to me, some of the most fascinating ones are these little island nations, and we have island nations that I guess in your particular zone. That are sinking, that are poor, that are wealthy, that are, I mean, as far as being here in the United States, even though I do live on an island, I live on mm-hmm. Whidbey Island. Okay. It seems very funny that I just seem like I'm part of the United States. I am part of the United States, but I am an island. I don't even think of myself as an island, you know, I mean, and you have literally countries. How many countries did you say are in your zone?
We have 30 plus countries in a zone. You know, it's 30 plus districts in our zone and countries. I'd need a count again, but it's significant, and I'll find that information as we go.
That's okay. Yeah, there's no test after it. So I would like
but
to
it's,
know
but it's multiple countries. Yeah,
I would like to know because that is a fascinating part, and we've actually had some guests on from St. Martin that were Rotary groups literally on the same island, but we're in two different countries. So it's an amazing place that you hang out in. But how did you get there? So usually the first question we ask people is, how did you get into Rotary? And then how did you get into Rotary in the Cayman Islands? Because you have that British accent. I wouldn't say you have a local Cayman accent. Is that correct?
No, if I go back to Britain, they speak very slowly to me. They think I'm a foreigner now because I don't speak exactly like the Brits speak in Britain.
Okay.
But you're right. I do have a lingering accent. And by the way, the answer is 29 countries.
There you go. I'm sure there's somebody listening to the podcast in their car going, it's got to be like 29 or 30.
Yeah. 31 districts in 29 countries, 21 clubs, and 66,000 members in total in zones 33 and 34. But how did I get here? It's a great question. Well, first of all, I was a relatively young man at the age of 27 when I was given an opportunity for a British corporation to set up an office for theirs overseas. And I had absolutely no idea where I was going. It was an 18-month contract to the Cayman Islands. I arrived here on thinking I probably would be here in most of the year. And
at least 18 months, right?
I wasn't even sure I'd make it 18 months at that time. It was a small island, and I thought, great, I'll enjoy the beach. And then back to business in the UK. I had some business plans over there, and actually had set up a company that I was going to return to. And anyway, Cayman grew on me, and it grew on me, funny enough, at least in large part through my involvement with Rotary. My business partners then understood the value of Rotary, and Rotary was one of our traditional clubs, but certainly had all the movers and shakers, including senior politicians, leaders of industry, the banking industry, and was part of it. And it was felt it would be a good move for me to go there. Now, I have to say, I wasn't that keen. My perception of Rotary at the time didn't feel it was a place that was going to be a good fit for me. So I avoided it for up two meetings, and finally they put me in a car and took me along there. I felt like I was being press ganged in and dropped me into the lunch and said, hey, go ahead, enjoy this. And I did. And I really did. I really understood pretty quickly what Rotary was, and the fact that it was a great fit for me. I mean, it was people that were like-minded businessmen, entrepreneurs, who were professionals as well as community leaders. Immediately, I found a home. I found 100 friends who would look after me in the community. And it wasn't just about business, and far from it. It was probably more about just being with like-minded people who cared about the community, were professional, were able to bring their vocations to bear and to make a difference on the ground in the community. The club at that time had just built the boys' home. They were building the girls' home. They were doing major projects. So they just set up the National Carnival. So they were really influential in the social and the community fabric, and were very respected. And I just felt that it was a great place to be, and I was honored and privileged to be there. And I've wanted to carry that experience on right the way through my Rotary life and be able to share that opportunity with others. And that's really why I do what I do.
So you very quickly said that you do all this entrepreneuring stuff, and you have all these other partners there in the Caymans that let you that let you take care of your quote Rotary addiction. What is your Rotary addiction? What do you mean by that? I mean, do you like walk around in Rotary shirts like Evan Burrell, or do you like, you know, I mean?
No, I think my Rotary addiction probably more internal. I'm not a great badge or pin wearer or shirt wearer.
I have your pin on, though. I have to admit, I don't know my pin. I do, and I
do try and wear it, especially when I'm on Zoom meetings, but I do try and wear it on a regular basis. No, I have a friend that really epitomizes the way I believe about Rotary. He says, if you took a blood sample from me, and he's a past district governor, one of my Rotary mentors, he says, if you look down the microscope, he said, you won't see platelets, you'll see little Rotary wheels floating around. And I believe that's what happens to people. I think that we have a great line in our induction speech for our club. And we talk about, you know, whilst we can make you a member of Rotary International, we can't make you a Rotarian. That's a good line. And I think there's a point at which we all become Rotarians. We become Rotarians at heart. And that Rotary addiction started when I became a Rotarian at heart, and has gone on ever since. You know, I see the power of what we're able to do in our communities on a global basis. I see how good the world could be if it follows Rotary as a template. And I honestly believe that if more people, if more organizations use the core values of Rotary, use the four-way test, use what and who we are as a basis for who they are, then I think we'd have a far better world. And that's, it may sound ephemeral. It may sound a little bit aspirational, but I think that goes down to the fundamental level. You know, I honestly believe that adopting the four-way test, and I've seen it in my businesses, adopting the four-way test in my businesses makes my business a better business. It makes it a more profitable business. It makes my staff feel they're more cared for. They understand that they're going to be dealt with fairly. So I've tried to apply it, and I've found that, you know, you can live a Rotarian life on all walks of what you do.
And that's, I join. No. I do ask, though, is that you do live on a beautiful island. You said that it is, mm-hmm. that it is a little bit more luxurious than some of the other mm-hmm. islands around you.
Absolutely.
I think in the United States, we put our checks out there, or we do things around the neighborhood, and we don't necessarily get to see it in action. Mm. Yeah. Do you think you have such a passion about Rotary because you go from your beautiful island and you can go right down in your zone and see what absolute actions your Rotarians mm-hmm. in action in Haiti? And so you actually, you don't get the disconnect. Is that why you think you've become so passionate?
Well, I think it's part of that Rotary experience, the experience we're offering our members, which is a very important one, showing our relevance to our communities. And I think that word relevance is something that we continually need to look at. And I know President Jen, when she's looking at that impact tool, we're now just not measuring outcomes and outputs. We're very much looking at measuring impact, and impact ties in with relevance very carefully, very closely. So I think you're right. I think there is, and certainly within the Caribbean district, we find in Zone 34, we are actually seeing membership growth that we think is tied into directly what you're talking about, the relevance of the Rotarians to their communities and the impact they're having. And as you say, the fact there's not a disconnect, you know. And it's not just within places like Haiti or Jamaica that have, you know, challenges and levels of poverty, perhaps, which are not seen elsewhere in the Caribbean. But it's also in places that like the Cayman Islands, where even though we're a fairly wealthy country, we don't have direct taxation. So we don't have the benefit of a government that has an income stream which enables them to support the community. So if you drive down West Bay Road in Grand Cayman, you'll see the bus shelters have been provided by Rotary Central, the second largest club on the island. They've been encouraged by government, as a partner with government, to go ahead and install those. And the same applies right the way through the Caribbean. There's not
food stamps, or there's not, you know, all those things, those structure things. Yeah, okay.
It tends not to be. So very much it's the service club, and the service community that tends to be falling back on to deliver these services. And, you know, and to the degree that this happens is even more so in places like Haiti, where you've got a government that just literally can't afford to do anything other than perhaps pay its employees and try and put regulation in place. And so there we have to go to the community and start at the community from the bottom up and start building structures with them and teaching them how to do it. And you know, that's been one of the most enjoyable and fulfilling aspects of what I've experienced as a Rotarian is seeing how Rotary can make a difference in those communities. And as I said, it's not just the poorer communities. But I think there's a message here that's a wider message. And I think it goes to, you know, we've got to look as whether it be North America or the UK or other places where Rotary is perhaps not seeing the membership growth you'd like to see, and in some places decline. We've got to look at that relevance. We've got to look at how we and our clubs can become relevant again to our communities. And it may not be that you take on massive projects, but we've got to look at the impact they're having. And we've also got to look at telling that story, because I don't think even though we do a much better job than we used to, and you're in the storytelling business, I think we can do a better job at communicating what we do to our communities and interfacing. So I totally agree with where you're coming from.
So is it, because I have to say, we are a very action oriented club, my club. Mm-hmm. And there are clubs that we call the traditional check writing clubs. Mm-hmm. And could that be where that disconnect is? If they're just writing a check, is there an assumption that we've had in the past with Rotary that's like, well, I'm writing a check, I'm sure it's getting to where it's supposed to go. And it's more of a feeling useful than necessarily being useful kind of dilemma? Is that what, could that be? Absolutely. Is that an old Rotary problem, I guess?
I think it's a very, very current Rotary problem. And I think, okay. I think, you know, it is one of the aspects that, that leads to a club, perhaps not members of a club or new members in particular, not feeling like the club is as relevant and as engaged with the community as it should be. And perhaps would be a detractor to certain types of Rotarians, the new Rotarians who are looking for a different experience joining. So I think we've got to be aware of this as a challenge. And I think, yeah, it is sometimes easier to write a check than to go out there and do all the checks and balances about how that money's being spent and actually become engaged in that. So, and it takes a little more effort. And in fact, sometimes it takes a lot more effort. But I think the rewards and the returns on investment are great. And it's great to hear you come from an action-oriented club. You know, we claim to be people of action.
Now, we claim.
Don't get me wrong. there's nothing wrong with writing a check.
Right.
You know, and it may be that you write checks sometimes. But as long as the club has a component of action, real action, and doing things in the community and being seen in the community, I think that there's a balance there, and certain clubs, you know, would look at a balance of the two. We are seeing clubs being formed in Zone 33 now, what we call impact clubs, which are totally based upon community service. They don't meet otherwise. They just go out there and do community service, and they love the community service and they're one of our most vibrant opportunities for growth in Zone 33. And we're having great success with that model. So there is clearly a demand. Now, you know, there is still a demand as well for the traditional type of club. And certainly some of the existing members, this is their Rotary experience, you know, some of this is what they like to see and what they like to do. I think we've got to be aware that, you know, to what degree is that sustainable to sit and continue to write checks. And you know, I'm not saying that's just the only measure of a club that perhaps is on the wane, but it could be indicative that a club that is on the wane, if it just does that and doesn't get involved in relevant programs and projects in the community.
Well, and I will say we are an international organization, and we forget that. And I think here in North America, or I should say America, the United States, I think, I will speak for myself, and everybody can just send your hate mails to rotarianpod@gmail.com. We sit back on the, well, you know, Rotary started with us in 1905 in Chicago. We know how to do it best. Yet if you're looking at innovation and you're looking at where Rotary is growing, sorry, all of us in the continental United States, Alaska and Hawaii, we're not growing as fast as the islands or the continent of Africa or India. I mean, those places are just exploding. And is it because we're sitting back here in America on our laurels a little bit? I mean, I've actually had somebody come to me, was very surprised that we don't sing a Rotary song and that we don't have a prayer. And I'm like, well, there isn't a prayer that there's going to, you know, you keep trying to get a prayer, not in my club, you know? So have we just kind of, it's okay. You can badmouth America. You're British and Cayman, you know, we pissed you off a couple hundred years ago anyhow for your country. So
I've got legs in both locations now. So, most of my Rotary friends are from North America, or they at least were before this podcast. And I hope that carries on.
But I have to say, I think that we are going America, like I said, send me the hate mail. I don't care. But I think America is going into that change kicking and screaming compared to some other areas.
Right. And I think, yes, certainly feeling that that North America was the birthplace of Rotary and feeling that there is value in that, you know, and pride in that is not a bad thing. But the reality is you just got to look at the numbers, and I'm very data driven. You know, at one point in time, and General Secretary John Hugo uses this statistic, you know, America was 100% of the Rotary members came from North America and the USA.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, expanded globally. And of course that number was going to go down, but that number is shrinking fast. And as you said, if you look at the numbers now, I think the numbers are down to 24%. Are now members from North America, whereas only 20 years ago, it was 35%, I believe. So we dropped a full 10% over 10 years. Now, where has that gone? As you rightly say, it's gone to India, Asia, and those growing markets. Now, how much of that is because they're growing and And because they're at a different point in their development curve, you know, you might say that, well, they've got more opportunities, there's more of a market there, so they've been able to expand. But it's really quite simple. You know, we've got to provide a product, create a product that meets the needs of our customers. So who are our customers? Well, in my opinion, we're a membership organization. Mm-hmm. Now, we do amazing service, but it all relies upon our membership, okay? So our customers are our members, quite clearly. And so we're doing a great job at attracting members in these emerging markets. And it must be because they see a value to them as individuals, a return on their investment. Now, somehow, for some reason, we're not creating that same return on investment to our customers in the North American markets and other more mature Western cultures in the world. The same applies to Great Britain, Northern Ireland, GBI, and Australia and other places of that same nature. And I think we need to ask ourselves why. And I think Rotary has asked itself why. And I think it continues to do so. And I know those conversations that are going on now are deeply as to why this is happening within those cultures and why are we seeing growth in other cultures. And one of the conclusions we've come to is that one size of Rotary doesn't fit all. That we need to be more open-minded in terms of what is Rotary and what our customers want in each of these areas. Now, it doesn't mean to say we need to shelve the core values of who we are, on the four-way test, the things that bind us, that make us Rotary, the overall overarching brand. All that needs to stay in place. But what we can understand is that different cultures need something different from Rotary and actually can develop better with different structures around them. And have you seen in the council legislation, which is our parliament, which was held earlier on this year in Chicago, the decision was taken to move forward with two pilots, look at different types of structures, one in Australia and the islands and zone eight, I believe it is, and one in Great Britain and Ireland. And Nikki, I think, may have touched on this when she spoke with you. Yeah. And that's the first step towards trying out different structures and different approaches to see how we can make the Rotarian experience on the ground better, help make our customers enjoy Rotary more, and to ensure that we stem the tide, because it's not just we're not growing in places like this, we're actually significantly shrinking in places like this, as I've indicated to you with those statistics. And we need to take this very seriously. But it really comes down to the fact that we really need to create a club experience at the end of the day, which is one which more people find beneficial, which more people get a great return on investment on, and which more people are attracted to become part of. And I think if we can do that, then we'll make a difference. So, you know, whilst structures are important, what it really comes down to at the end of the day is our Rotarians' experiences and how they feel about Rotary and how they feel about their clubs, more importantly than anything else, because the club is where the experience is. Rotarians don't leave Rotary, they leave a Rotary club.
Well, and I was going to say our mutual friend, a gentleman, Brian Rush, said that, you know, you may lose some of these changes. You may lose members, but you're certainly not going to lose Rotarians. And I thought that was a really interesting statement, because it's like, well, because I have a feeling, you know, if we take on some of these new things, and some people are going to go kicking and screaming into that good night with all of these changes. And I get it. I get it. I mean, my particular club ranges from 30s to 80s, almost 90s now. I mean, that's a big chunk. Well, let's get to some of our questions, because I want to know you about a Rotarian. And you've dabbled on the four-way test, and we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But the question that I get the most fan mail about is about an it moment. And so is there a moment in Rotary? And I already saw the smile, which is great. Usually happens. Is there a moment in Rotary that you can have the most crappiest day and you can think of that moment and go, okay, this was worth it. This is why I do all this craziness, is for moments like this. What was your it moment?
Well, I continue to have it moments all the time. So, I mean, I'm really lucky. And Rotary's been giving me that opportunity. No, I have an it moment every Wednesday morning when I chair the steering committee for Hamwash. And I see how we've come on since 2018, when we started this program, to when we were a very small group, including some, you know, notable presences, including past RA President Barry Rassin, past RA Director John Smarge, and and others from Rota International. And I thought that we might be able to take this further. And a couple of weeks ago, we had 74 people on our call from across the Rotary world who want to get involved or are involved. We now have an executive director. So I get a tremendous reward from seeing the success of the programs that I've been honored and privileged to be involved in building. And Hamwash is certainly a constant it moment for me. And the support, we couldn't do that without the support of Rotary International and the Rotary Foundation. So that one inspires me on a regular basis. It's like my Wednesday morning sort of oasis in the middle of the week. Just refreshes me and drives me forward and keeps me going. But I think my Rotary moment perhaps occurred early in my Rotary career. As I said, I'd arrived in Cayman. I was fairly young, understood a little bit about Rotary, and very quickly got pushed into the position of being a fairly young president. When you're young, I think, you know, I wanted to win the presidential citation. I wanted to win all the awards.
You want the flags and the buttons.
To me, that was the measure of success. But what I hadn't realized, and I think probably I was, I was fairly passionate by that time, but I really didn't get the power of Rotary and the power of Rotary to change lives. And I had a set of circumstances where I agreed for the first time. I pushed our club to do a matching grant, as it was at the time. So we've become global grants. Our club had never done one before. I said, I want to do one. It's important to me to do something internationally. And I found a packaged grant at the back of the manual that they used to have. They used to produce this manual every year, and you go to the back of it, and there was a list of what they called packaged grants. And all I had to do was to send $6,000, I think it was, across to a district in India, which was then matched with the Rotary Foundation. And we ended up doing close to 1,000 cataract operations. And our club was responsible with that $6,000 for 600 of them. It really showed me the way, you know, the foundation worked and multiplied. And I was very proud of myself. And we ticked that box. And I talked about the fact we'd done our first ever matching grant. I did it at our changeover night to the installation of the new president. And I, you know, boasted to my friends about it and felt really good. About 2 years later, I got a letter from the assistant governor of the district governor's group representative, as they were known at the time, from India, and said, I wanted to pass on to you a conversation I had with the son of one of the recipients of the cataract operations. I said, he said that he just wanted to pass his thanks on because of your club, his mother was able to see her grandchildren for the first time ever. And she passed away a year afterwards having the operation. And he said it made such a major difference in her life and our life, knowing that their grandmother could see his children. At that moment, I thought, my God, you know, I've been thinking about the checklists and how.
I was going to say, you were all about the flag and the button and the pin and the dits and the, yeah, but it actually does something.
And that one story really, really resonated and made me understand. How did the other 999 people feel? What stories did they have? And the power of Rotary came to me all of a sudden at that point in time. It almost sounds religious, but it was to that point without opening my eyes to realize the difference we were making to individuals, to people on the ground, and to families and to their lives. And that changed my life. And whenever I tell that story, a shiver goes up my spine, and I've seen it again and again and again. And I rate Rotary as, we have our challenges. We have our challenges. We talked about them in terms of membership, but why do we want to grow membership? Why should we grow membership? Because we're sort of doing okay as we are. You know, some of our clubs are okay. I tell you why we want to grow it, so we can let people tell more of those stories, so we can do more good in the world. And good is a vanishing commodity. This one, we're not the only proprietor of it, but we are a custodian of it, and we should value it, what we do.
Well, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and you know, dry your eyes out there in the audience. no, but it's true though. I mean, I'm always the snarky one in the room, but that is really true. And I think that's what Jennifer was talking about, that we don't tell our stories. I do believe that the early instances of Rotary was, we were not supposed to brag. And we were not supposed to tell people. Yeah. In fact, Happy Bucks or all those fines and stuff that all those fantastic sergeant of arms used to basically charge us to talk about ourselves. And so I think we are I think we are getting our comeuppance for all those years of not talking about when we really should, because that, you know, that's your, and every Wednesday, could you really quickly explain what every Wednesday is, this hand washing program that you're, just in case their listeners don't know what it is?
It's a steering committee meeting. So we have a steering committee meeting, but we've left it very open. So anyone interested in the hand wash project can actually join that meeting, and there'll be updates on the program, how it's going. Right now, we're focusing on 5 of the 144 communes in Haiti, and rolling out a very, very well-planned, sustainable program, community-led, bottom-up, a rotary-driven program within those communes. And you'll hear reports about what's going on in Haiti on the ground. You'll hear how those projects are moving forward. We have 8 subcommittees who, range from fundraising and marketing right the way through to projects and technical. And each one of those project committees gives a report. But it's just a great place to get together to see Rotary in action and see the difference we're making. And we have Rotarians from Haiti coming on and explaining what's going on the ground there. We have our district champions. We have champion districts from across the Rotary world who are participating in the meeting. And each one of those is focused on one of the communes. And they tell the progress they've made on delivering clean water and sanitation and hygiene to the people on the ground. And we just a great experience of Rotary in 1 hour and all aspects of it. And then we make progress. And of course, we have board meetings and we have executive management meetings and we have other meetings. But this is very much more of a, almost more of a, an open forum where there is structure to it. And when I'm available, I chair it. But for the most part, it's just a great energy every Wednesday morning to see Rotary in action, people of action, people of purpose, people of influence, people of value, doing what they do. And doing it over a Zoom meeting and planning for actions that mean so much on the ground to the people of Haiti.
Was Zoom a good thing for Rotary?
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
we wouldn't be sitting here now.
That's true. It was great for a podcaster, I'll tell you that much. Yes.
Absolutely. No, I think Zoom was a good thing. In fact, within our district, we had to use it. If you're on 16 islands, you have no choice. You can't get together all the time.
So across from island to island, it would be nice to say, we're all meeting on your island this week, and then next week we'll meet on someone else's island.
That sounds lovely in principle. Most times that's a day trip through Miami International Airport rather than hopping from island to island. So it's
touché.
So it's a little less practical. But no, I think on top of not only was it good, I think we have to also look at the silver lining that COVID brought in that regard. And obviously COVID was a terrible thing, but it did jettison into the future when it came to, or jettison into the present when it came to using virtual technology. And I think, we're now pretty good at it. And I think now we're in a new normal, which I think is a better normal. Some clubs have struggled to get back from a virtual to an in-person platform and struggle with hybrid. But I think on balance, it's just given us another opportunity to grow Rotary. And there's some great cause-based Rotary clubs, e-clubs coming around now that are creating a Rotary experience for other individuals who might not have accessed Rotary before, had access to Rotary before. So I think it's just another opportunity for us to be even better.
Well, I have just a couple more questions for you, and then I'll let you go back to your rainy tropical day. But you did mention at the beginning of our conversation that as a business person, you use the 4-way test. And so we do talk about it in the podcast. I've had everything from we don't need it anymore to a very esoteric approach to the 4-way test. And then you seem to hint that it's the way you do business. How is the 4-way test in your life? How do you use the 4-way test?
Well, yeah, no, I obviously, when you're talking about absolutes, they're aspirational. And, we try to, we need something to aim towards as that high bar. And I think the 4-way test gives us that high bar. But, I was touched by the story then initially, the person who pulled up the 4-way test actually used it for his business. And I thought, let me try and adopt this, because I was going through a process of of managing a medium-sized company in the Caribbean island with multiple cultures coming from all across the world. I said we had 138 nationalities, multiple types of market, and traditional management techniques weren't working too well. So I thought, well, let me try and apply the four-way test to this. And, is it the truth? I mean, why would we not as a company want to be honest to each other and our customers?
One would hope,
One would hope.
But, the first one should be a gimme, I think. Yeah. But yeah.
Okay. But truth is subjective. We know that. But it's certainly something that then opens discussion is what is the truth?
And exactly.
I think so. I mean, if you can't do business and just stay in the same way as Rotary without talking the truth, then probably you shouldn't be in business. So that's the first one. Is it fair to were concerned? This was the one that I used most when it came to my internal team, because I'm in real estate business, so I have a sales team, individual agents who I've got to allocate prospects and opportunities to and leads to. I have and they have a variety of skill sets and a variety of expertise. I have internal staff that support them, so. That one, I think I thought through very carefully and try to apply that. You know, is it fair to everyone in my company, the way I'm handling my business, the way I'm allocating business to these individual agents? So, what do I pay and how do I pay salespeople versus managers? Because the salespeople, of course, all think they're the only source of income for the business. But, of course, right. The support staff sometimes left there in the back. It made me reevaluate. How I treat my support staff, my management team. And for example, we decided to bring an accounting structure in place where we gave profit bonuses to our management team that came out of that thought process of, is it fair to all concerned? And we had an open conversation about it. And this is, I think, again, one thing that came out of this adoption of the four-way test was that we decided to adopt a collaborative management structure. So where we could test whether this was the case. We were adopting these principles, but we needed to be able to test it. And the only way of testing it was by opening that management up to the team as a whole. So we have a management team now, even though we're a small company, management team of 5 or 6 people that meet once a week. We have a full team meeting. The management team reports back to the other team meeting. The team meeting has the opportunity for input. And I view that all falling under, is it fair to all concerned? Because part of being fair is letting people's voice being heard and letting them have their opinion and letting them be in a safe and caring and comfortable space where they can give their opinion without fear of any sort of reprisal or being uncomfortable doing so. So we've created that environment. Now so all those things apply to Rotary clubs as well. So, yeah. And I think some of our clubs, people, especially members will join and don't feel comfortable standing up and talking about where they are. We've got to create caring Rotary clubs, places where new Rotarians and existing members feel they can feel comfortable and cared for and safe to be able to say what they want to say within reason, obviously. So again, I find that analogous between what I was doing my organization. Now, I have to tell you, sometimes my staff say, that four-way test you have, that second one, we're going to rename that as, is it unfair to all concerned?
Well, I was going to say, because fair to all concerns doesn't necessarily mean you get what you want. It means it has to be fair to everybody.
Absolutely.
Because I've been on the blunt end of that one more than once, going, okay, it's fair. I don't have to like it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So you're spot on. So, the joke is, okay, yeah, so you're being unfair to all concerned again. I said, exactly. I'm not asking you all to like me. I'm asking you to hate me in a similar sort of way. So equally, so it's all
well,
good.
Yeah, because you want your business, to use the four-way test in business, you want the greatest good for the business. Because you can go home and leave the business and have dinner and go with your family and whatever. But what's best for the business may not necessarily be... Yeah.
Well, I think there's a place where the two touch, and I think there's a place where it can be best for the business and to be best for the team, and I strive to get to that point because I think and what I can tell you is that it's really had a great effect on my business adopting this approach, and it has because I can see lower numbers of staff that would wish to leave for other than sort of just having to move to a different country type reasons, natural reasons. So we've got better retention, we've got better engagement, we've got a better feel, a better atmosphere around the team meetings, around teams as a whole, and better productivity. And I think we, you know, we can adopt something similarly in our approach to Rotary and our clubs. We can be looking at them and say, how do we create experiences where our Rotarians are not only engaged to become part of it, but thrive in their Rotary experiences and really, really, really get to love and enjoy Rotary and have enjoyable, and it being it will be a place they want to go. And it's a challenge to do that with everyone all the time. I mean, I can tell you the management experience I had learned as a president to a club was one of the greatest challenges I'd ever taken on. And I think we all probably feel that. But I think there are things we can learn in a business for Rotary and vice versa as well.
Well, and I said this several times that my favorite Rotary pin is the one that says past president on it. And I think pets should have a wonderful class on personalities, because that's what you find out in presidency. I'm speaking for myself in that one. All right. So I got one more question for you, and I thank you so much for finally having us find the time to do this.
Pleasure.
But this one's called the elevator question, and it's one that everybody knows that we're getting to the end of the podcast when I ask it. And it just simply is, somebody notices your pin. Maybe you're on a Zoom call in your case, and they say, that's a Rotary pin. Why ever would I want to join Rotary? What do you say to them?
I say, first of all, have you got an hour? Because it's going to take me an hour to explain to you how much this has changed my life. And I say to them, if it hadn't been for Rotary, I wouldn't be standing with you right here, right now, because there are pivotal moments in my life that Rotary made that difference, and it can make that difference to your life as well. Now, that's the hook. Now, hopefully at that point in time, you then swap a business card or you say, right, they want to know more. But I think elevators move pretty fast these days, so you've got to get it over pretty quickly. But I think one of the biggest challenges is how do you create an elevator speech out of what we do? And I think that's also one of the biggest challenges of our organization. We do so much for so many people. So I do tell us the hand wash story. And I said, if you want an example, I said, we're an audacious organization. I said, we're courageous, we're impactful. Right now, we are ridding the world of a disease for the second time only in this history with polio. And by the way, our partners, the Bill and Melinda Gates on this, and UNICEF and the World Bank and all those other guys. And by the way, as well, right now, I'm going to go on a call in shortly that's going to provide clean water to all the people of Haiti forever. And that's the sort of thing we do as Rotarians. And if you can't get them at that point, then
maybe you want to get off the elevator anyway, because I don't know if they're the right.
Exactly.
Maybe that's a bad elevator for you. All right. Jeremy, thank you so much for being a part of this. I didn't ask you about your lovely wife, Michelle. I'm sure she's doing fantastic. She's a part of Rotary too. She is not just your arm candy. Is that correct?
Well, I think some people say I'm her arm candy, but anyway, no, Touché. I'm joking totally. Far from it.
She's going to listen to that and go, oh God, okay.
We're arm candy for each other. No, she's amazing. No, she is my biggest supporter. She is an honorary Rotarian. She isn't a fully paid up member, but I can tell you that when we say we've got 1.2 million members, I think we have far, far more than that. And there's many, many people like partners like Michelle in the world who do an amazing job for Rotary and are part of a very, very important part of our Rotary family. And of course, we've got Rotary actors and their partners now who have been elevated recently. And I'm also on the Interactive Advisory Council and the board's representative on that and that group. So we've got some great youth programs coming through. So yeah, I'm a great believer in looking at Rotary family as a whole, and I wouldn't be able to do Rotary the way I do without Michelle's support. And she's so important to me, and I love her dearly.
Oh, well, there you go. I got the honor. That's how we officially met, was her birthday party. I just happened to be at the right bar at the right time. And it finally dawned on me that I was hanging out with Jeremy, and I got to hang out with him again. Thank you for being on the show today. I so appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Gwen. It's been a real, real pleasure to be here. And we wish you hopefully not make it the last time that we hang out at a party one way or another or on a podcast.
Absolutely not. In fact, I've already got my tickets. I'll see you in Melbourne if you're going to be there. That shouldn't be too hard of a jump.
Absolutely be there. Looking forward to it. It'll be a wonderful celebration.
All right. Awesome. Drinks are on me.
That sounds good, Gwen. Hold me to it.
Yes, hold me to it. At least for the first round. Jeremy, what a joy to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for the conversation, especially about Haiti being right next door and being people of action that really get to see the fruits of their labor. I think that was awesome to hear about. I guess I should say thank you for your service for Jennifer this year and, of course, Gordon next year. And thank you for being such a huge mega Rotary fan. The world needs more of you, and I appreciate it. So, hey, if you liked hearing about Jeremy's story today and you have a Rotarian that I should know about, let me know, please. RotarianPod@gmail.com. And of course, tell people about the podcast, have them download and rate us, and check me out on my radio show, Rotary Radio UK, every Wednesday. All right, then, until next week, when I introduce you to another amazing person that proudly calls themselves a Rotarian, take care of yourself and the world around you. And we'll hear you next week on the I'm a Rotarian podcast. Have a wonderful week, everybody.